I was reminded as I was coming over here of a couple of things. First of all, Susan James gave me a reminder. She said that Dwayne Cudjoe this morning said that his message would be between 30 and 35 minutes. If you know anything about Susan, she looked at her watch when he said that, and sure enough, 30 minutes. So she said, just remember that, Bill. And secondly, one of the other ladies said that if I was running over, that she would have the kids lined up in the back ready to be picked up by you parents. So anyway, I thought those were kind of funny. Michelle and I have really appreciated you and appreciated being able to work here at Metropolitan Baptist Church. It's been 9 months now, and been a lot of activity and a lot of blessing in working with you. You know, when I was candidating, I think you filled me in on a lot of things, including the weather. So yesterday was not any kind of a surprise because you warned us. But anyway, if you would turn to 2 Kings chapter 5, we're going to look at one of my favorite narratives in the scripture, the story of Naaman. And there is a lot of gold nuggets tucked in here that we're going to be looking at tonight. So it's kind of hard to come up with a theme or a title, but I guess if we had to pick a title, it would be God Best Uses Humbled People. So let's begin with verse 1 of chapter 5 of 2 Kings. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. I think we as people tend to look up to those who are in high positions of leadership and authority, and we think especially of those in the army and the other military groups. And what is quite common of those people, especially in positions of being general, is that these people are used to winning, conquering, and overcoming. They're used to planning and strategizing ways to overcoming great odds. So this is the man that we've been introduced to, Naaman, a general, a commander of an army. He's used to having victory, used to overcoming, but you'll notice the word but. But he had leprosy. This is a big, big contrast here. The contrast is this. As we noted, he's used to overcoming great enemies. This is one enemy that in his flesh, in his own ability, or even depending upon other people, he would not be able to overcome. Leprosy. You know, leprosy, as many of you are well familiar with from your studies of the Old Testament, often pictures sin. Let's take a look at, if you would, Leviticus chapter 13, and we'll see how leprosy is really intended to be a picture of sin and its consequences. Look with me, if you would, at Leviticus 13, verse 3. It says here, the priest is to examine the sore on his skin, the sore, of course, being leprosy. And if the hair in a sore has turned white and the sore appears to be more than skin deep, it is an infectious skin disease. One of the character traits of sin or of leprosy is that it goes beyond the skin. It goes beyond being a surface problem. Leprosy is much deeper than the skin. It's much like our sinful human nature. The Bible has nothing good to say about the flesh, our old nature, because our sinful nature is the source of so many of our troubles. Sinners cannot be changed by shallow surface remedies. So leprosy was a disease that went below the skin. Secondly, if you look at verse 7, it says, but if the rash does spread in his skin after he has shown himself to the priest to be pronounced clean, he must appear before the priest again. See, leprosy was not an isolated sore on just one part of the body. It could be that, but quite often it would spread all throughout the body. Sin is a lot like that. It has a way of spreading. It has a way of deepening. Quite often sin starts with a thought, then it follows to a desire, then an act, and then terrible results. So skin not only is below a surface problem, it has a way of spreading, but if you look at verses 44 through 46, we'll see that sin defiles and it isolates. Here in verse 44, it says, "The man is diseased and is unclean. The priest shall pronounce him unclean because of the sore on his head. The person with such an infectious disease must wear torn clothes, let his hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of his face, and cry out, 'Unclean, unclean.' As long as he has the infection, he remains unclean. He must live alone. He must live outside the camp." So with that backdrop, if you'll turn back to 2 Kings chapter 5, we have a picture of this amazing man who's highly regarded, but he has a major problem, and that is leprosy. Look at verse 2. It says, "Now bands from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, 'If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy.'" Now, God oftentimes will, through his sovereignty, choose various people throughout the world to call unto himself. And this was true of Naaman. God had his hand upon Naaman. Not only had he given him victory to Aram, but he used the situation of the spoils that were obtained through his victories, and he allowed one of those spoils to be this little Jewish girl who had faith in God. And she was living and serving in his household. And as a result, one day she probably noticed Naaman's wife was quite distressed and felt that she had an answer for his problem. And so she shared what that answer is. And what is that? She said, "If only my master would see the prophet who's in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." You know, this reminds me of a couple of things here. First of all, when we think of this little girl, we think that she's in extraordinary circumstances. She's been taken away from her family, been taken away from her friends. She's in a foreign land with foreign customs, and she's little. And instead of being frightened and overwhelmed by all that, she's serving very dutifully to this this general of the army, and she's remembering that she has this powerful God who works miracles through one of the prophets of Israel. And so she takes the time to share that with Naaman's wife. You know, that's a reminder to us. What are the circumstances that we're in? Whether it's our workplace, whether it's circumstances in our life. And within those limitations, do we take the time to be a witness to the Lord as she was? You know, think about Daniel and Joseph. They both were taken captive in differing scenarios. And yet, they did not allow those scenarios to be limitations on their ministry and their witness for the Lord. And that was true of this little girl. You know, this also reminds me that God uses little people. And this is one of the beauties of working in the children's ministry. But think about in the Old Testament, there was an 8-year-old king who reigned and ruled over Israel. There was a little boy who had a lunch that Jesus used his lunch to feed 5,000. We should never underestimate the power of a little one and what the Lord can do through that person. Well, some advice was given, and it was heeded. Naaman didn't waste any time. Look at verse 4. "Naaman went to his master, and he told him what the girl from Israel had said. 'And by all means go,' the king of Aram replied. 'I will send a letter to the king of Israel.'" Now notice something else here. Naaman gets this news that there's a solution for his problem, and instead of impulsively reacting and just quickly leaving the country and going to see this prophet, he has a great respect for chains of authority and for authority structures. And notice what he did. It says that he went to his king and he requested permission to leave. And he, of course, got that. God will honor when we honor authority structures. And even in these kinds of scenarios, God will honor them. It says, "I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. He has this presupposition here that is wrong. He's thinking that when he gets to where he's going and he meets with this prophet, that he will be able to use his wealth as an influence, potentially, of solving his problem. One of the things he's overlooking here is that there's going to be grace. Grace is going to be the answer. And so he brings all this wealth with him. And it says as he arrives, the letter that he took to the king of Israel read, "With this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy." Now, I didn't think that was what was understood. I thought that the prophet was to do the healing. Somewhere there's been a mix-up of communication. And as we keep reading, verse 7, "As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, 'Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me?'" Now, Naaman was probably pretty excited as he was heading off to be cured of this incurable disease. And in the midst of all of this activity, there's a lot of confusion. In fact, it looks like there's a major obstacle. You know, sometimes just before the Lord gets ready to do a great and mighty work, he allows things to happen that maybe give the appearance that he's not going to do what he said he was going to. He tests our faith. And I think that very well could be what was happening here, because obviously there's a lot of confusion. And Naaman could be in for a disappointment here. But as we read with verse 8, "When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message, 'Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel.'" You know, as I was saying a few minutes ago, God calls us. We don't understand everything about that calling, but we do know Scripture says there's none that seek after God. And here, as it may appear that Naaman is seeking after God, God is drawing Naaman to himself. In fact, if you will, look, let's turn to Luke chapter 4 and look at verse 27. And we will see Jesus making reference that Naaman was selected of all of the people who had leprosy. Luke 4:27. It says, and this says, "And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elisha the prophet, yet not one of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian." All right, you can flip back to 2 Kings 5. The point there is God calls. He has a calling for those he wants to become believers and those he wants to follow him. All right, looking at verse 9, it says, "So Naaman went with his horses and chariots, and he stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, 'Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed.'" Notice that Elisha didn't come outside. Ever wonder why? Well, remember, if you had leprosy, you were to keep at a distance, and with Elisha having the role of prophet, he couldn't defile himself by coming near. So he sent one of his messengers out, and he gives him the message, the way that he can be cleansed. Again, we have a presupposition that Naaman is going to have that is wrong. Look at verse 11. "But Naaman went away angry and said, 'I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of his leprosy.'" You see, he had the wrong presupposition. He had an expectation that this would be just a real instant cure. And that's not what God had in mind. He wanted to humble him. He wanted him to do something that would be very humbling. And that is to go and dip himself in the Jordan River, which is a very dirty river. In fact, notice he says in verse 12, "Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed?" So he turned and went off in a rage. Notice the words, "he turned." What's he turning from? He's turning from God's way to be healed. If we were to ask how this might apply to us, do we turn from God's ways that he has for us? When we do, it generally results in very negative emotions. Look at what the emotion he had. So he turned and went off in a rage. He was angry. Verse 13, Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it?" I like the way that Naaman's servants are approaching Naaman. They know that Naaman doesn't have the right thinking, and they realize what this thinking is causing. It's causing a lot of negative emotion, and it's causing a very dangerous situation. It's a life and death situation. If he turns from God's way, he is risking dying of leprosy. Notice how the servants, which God tends to use, doesn't he? He's used a little girl. He's using some servants here to get Naaman's attention. Notice how they approach him. They don't say, "You fool, the prophet said." They say, "My father, my father." Remember this morning, "Our Father"? A real term of respect. Then notice that they use the art of asking questions. You know, when you're dealing with somebody who has wrong thinking, or you're trying to persuade them to another thought, maybe you're trying to convince them of that God exists, or maybe you're trying to convince them of salvation, maybe you're trying to convince them to overcome a sin. One of the most effective ways we can do that is through asking questions, because the question will remain with them. They will walk away with that question unanswered in their mind. Well, it didn't take Naaman in this particular situation too long to answer that question. They say, "How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed?" Notice it says, "So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy." What a contrast here. Verse 14 says, "So he went." The last time we looked, he was turning away from God's ways. Now he's going towards God's ways, and that's toward the dirty river. He's humiliating himself. He's dipping himself 7 times, following God's precise instructions, and as a result, he receives the blessing of God. We might say, in some sense, as a picture of salvation, he is cured of leprosy. He receives salvation. It says, "As the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored, and he became clean like that of a young boy." You know, when God does a work, he does it the right way. In this case, he not only restored his flesh, but it says that he had the flesh of a young boy, totally, totally clean. When it comes to God cleaning us with his word, he takes the old things and he replaces them with the new things. Whether those are new thoughts, new ways of doing things, God has a way, and his way is what's best. And Naaman followed that and received the blessing. Look at verse 15. It says, "Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, 'Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel.'" Once again, we have a contrast. I want you to jump back up to verse 11. And it says, "But Naaman went away angry and said, 'I thought.'" He thought. He had a way of looking at things. It was the wrong way of looking at things. Now look. It says, "Now I know." He's convinced of God's ways. And it says, "Now I know there is no God in all the world except in Israel." He's now becoming a testimony of God's power, of God's grace in his life. And even though the next part of the verse says, "Please accept now a gift from your servant," as you read on, you see that as Naaman wanted to give this gift, maybe of appreciation, we're not exactly sure, the prophet, of course, does not receive it, and Naaman accepts that. In closing, look at verse 19 and what Elisha says to Naaman. "Go in peace." That's the whole point here, was that Naaman needed to be convinced of God's ways. He needed to be humbled. And when he followed God's ways, when he was willing to allow himself to be humbled, he was enabled to experience peace. These are some challenging words for us. A couple of thoughts here by way of application. We might ask ourselves, again, what I mentioned earlier, whatever your situation is, wherever you are, God can use you. God can use you. And God used the little girl. God used Naaman's servants. And they made a difference. Not only that, we can ask ourselves, how can we share Christ with others? You see, this is a picture of salvation. And when you're trying to show somebody how God wants to reach them through grace and wants to lead them to Him, you can use this passage. You can show how Naaman is a picture of sin. And as a picture of sin, how Naaman was later cleansed. He wasn't able to buy his salvation. It was all through grace. It was through belief in God. In fact, it was the belief of what he was told that led him to go into the Jordan. This is also a picture for people when they have a sin problem in their life. You know, I was sharing a while back with a couple regarding some difficult problems they were having. And I don't want to go into the details, but I showed him this passage, and I showed him how Naaman had to be willing to come to the place where he was willing to change his mind and to do something that maybe he didn't want to do to get out of the problem that he had. And I've used this a couple of times in that way, and it's been very effective. So that's why I wanted just to share a few thoughts from 2 Kings chapter 5. It's meant a lot to me personally. I've had the privilege and blessing of sharing it with others and seeing them challenged by it too. So I just pray that the Lord will take a few of these words, a few of these thoughts that have been shared, and will enable you to not only be blessed by them, but to be able to use these principles in your own walk with Him. Rick, I'm going to ask if you'll come up and close us in prayer.